Welcome to another episode of the Disciple Making Leader podcast. I'm your host today, Ben Borgman, the executive director of Disciple First. I've got some friends. We're already having fun in the podcast room today.
Absolutely.
Got some special guests with us today. As always, Pastor Craig Etheridge.
Old Faithful.
Old Faithful co-host over there.
Just
the only reason
here.
Anybody listens to the podcast.
Mm.
Right over here.
Yeah, Craig. Craig Etheridge. Yeah.
Thank you, Ben. Good to have
Thanks
you here. Good to be with you.
Yep, and we have a really good friend, a very special guest.
Celebrity guest.
That's stretching. He
likes to hunt, so he's a friend.
Yes,
so
he is.
That's right. Somebody that likes to hunt, and you like to hunt, you need to be friends with him.
I know. I tried to do it, and ministry happened.
Ministry challenges, which is what we're going to talk about today. But
we still did our ministry.
Pastor JT Thornton, how you doing today, bud?
I'm great.
Let's go, JT.
Coming all the way over from Sweetwater, had some meetings in DFW.
That's right.
Decided to come hop on another podcast for you. Probably if you keep up with us this season, you've probably seen JT from the Disciple Making Leader Live, some of those episodes we've been sharing. We had him a part of that and was able to kind of introduce this ministry you're launching in Catalyst 645.
Yes, sir.
Which is exciting. You got the official hat.
That's
on
right.
Today.
It's not a ministry unless you have merch, right?
So that's true.
But this is the only merch we have. This one hat. So that's it.
It's a very important hat.
Right? Yeah. No, it's really good to be here. Just grateful for the partnership and friendship been able to develop with y'all, and man, just seeing how God continues to move in the area of disciple making. It's powerful. It's energizing. It's exciting.
Yeah. So tell everybody again, just remind everybody, where do you serve? Tell us real quick about Catalyst 645 as well.
Absolutely. So currently I'm the lead pastor at Trinity Baptist Church in Sweetwater. Been there for about 4.5 years now. And man, that's a whole testimony in itself. We never wanted to go to Sweetwater. We said no. But the Lord said yes, and we couldn't be more excited that God actually led us there. We are learning so much from the people there. It's been an incredible journey in ministry just to be part of. Catalyst 645 really was birthed out of the last couple years in particular, where first started with God just doing a work in my heart of just challenging me what it looked like to love him with the fullness of myself, based out of Deuteronomy 6:4-5, where love the Lord your God with all of your heart, soul, and strength. In Hebrews, translated to mean mind, spirit, and body. So it's the fullness of myself and of ourselves. It's not the perfection of it, right? Because that's where God's grace comes in, but it's the pursuit of it. And Catalyst 6:4-5's intent is that we are actively connecting. We're much closer now than we were in the fall, and we're really, really close to launch. But we will be connecting active pastors and ministry leaders with new pastors and ministry leaders to be able to just have a one-on-one six-month pathway of spiritual formation, that as you're entering into the season of ministry, it's what does it look like to love God with all of your heart, soul, and strength in the season that you're in? Because entering into ministry is just a new season. It's a different season.
Right.
So
absolutely. Yeah. Much needed.
Yes,
absolutely.
Sir. We're excited. It's been exciting to see how God's led it every step of the way.
And I can tell you, when I went as a lead pastor for the very first time, there was a very seasoned, successful pastor in that same city. Mm-hmm. And he just opened up a door for me. I would go in, hang out. Uh-huh. I'd say, I have no idea what I'm doing. What would you do? Is this normal? Sometimes they go, no, Craig, that's not normal.
Right? Yeah. Red flag.
But I'm very thankful for him and just being a consistent voice in my life.
Right.
And that was many years ago, and he still continues to be that voice in my life.
Well, praise God, because I mean, not everybody also has that voice, you know.
That's right.
Like, not everybody has the opportunity to start in ministry and have someone there that wants to invest in them.
Yeah.
And Catalyst 645 is just supposed to be a third party avenue for that, to be able to walk through that season. And so we're going to continue to let it do what God wants it to do and just do the best we can not to mess it up. So,
and that's excited to have you here.
Yeah, it's great to be here, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, we love your heart. We're glad that we get to do ministry with you and watch what God's doing through you and your church and
likewise.
Now Catalyst 645.
Yeah.
So,
thank you.
All right, so ministry's easy, right?
Oh, totally easy.
Mm. Easy. You could do it. You could do it just with your eyes
closed. Right? Absolutely. Yeah.
No. I think you know, we would all agree ministry has its challenges, has very unique challenges. You two are both senior leaders, which has a whole nother level of challenge that kind of comes with that. Just the weight of leading and shepherding, There's not many people in a church or on a church staff that understand what you're going through on a day-to-day basis, that pull of, you know, just absorbing people's pain or dealing with these different issues and the weight that you guys carry as senior pastors. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what I wanted to focus on today is what maybe are some unique challenges that you as pastors face? Because again, ministry is not easy. Yeah. It has lots of challenges, and there's health effects, there's emotional weight and things that carry on that really keep you from being effective ministers. So we want to stay on top of that. We want to talk about that, and kind of like what you're doing with an older pastor and a younger pastor, we want to do that on the episode today is from your experience, you know, some of these challenges, how have you kind of dealt with that? How, you know, what did you feel as you were going through these challenges? And then how do you respond? And so I thought no other, like a great place to go, no other better place would be to ask Google AI what the top 10 challenges pastors are facing in ministry today, right? I think that would just be a great source of wisdom. But honestly, I just wanted to talk off the cuff. So I was like, hey, let's just do that. That's not what we think, but this is pulling from real data. This list actually pulls from a lot of Lifeway research and Barna research. You know, it summarized it, 42% of pastors have seriously considered quitting full-time ministry due to these compounding factors. I don't think it's not just one of these things that's an issue. You may deal with only one of these and not that, but I really do think probably multiple of these and the compounding factor of that.
Absolutely.
I know, Craig, we've talked about this before, and it's not the first hit that gets you. It's that's the 100 more that comes after it, and it's just these hits from ministry as you're serving and challenges that come up, conflicts that come up. And it's that. That's
yeah, we talked about this when you watch a football game. You see a quarterback get sacked, and he just lays there, and you're like, well, that wasn't that bad a hit. But it was the 15 hits before that.
Yeah.
And the compounding nature of it. And a pastor that's listening, he knows what the hits are. And they may not in and of themselves in isolation be that bad.
Yeah.
But the compounding effect eventually takes a toll on you as a person. And on your mind, your heart. And so these things that we're going to list here, they're all real, but the compounding nature is really where it becomes overwhelming for a lot of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's see what it said. So I put this in, you know, what are the top 10 ministry challenges pastors are facing today? Here's what they said, and then we'll dive into a couple of these that we feel like are, you know, probably the most common. All right. So job-related stress and burnout. We've actually done a podcast on that, talking about how do you have a balanced life and creating Sabbath rhythms within your day, week, month, all those different things. Go back and listen to that. We'll get the producer over there, Dallas Harvey, to put a link for you to that episode in there. Developing leaders and volunteers. This is one we're going to dive into a little bit deeper in a minute, but this was a big one. They say 77% of pastors it's the top practical need they have. It's volunteer engagement. Like, this is the top thing I'm dealing with is developing leaders and volunteers.
Absolutely.
So that's a big one. We'll come back to that one. Political and cultural divisions. Turn on the news, or maybe don't turn on the news.
Periodically.
Yeah, so that's a big deal. Feelings of loneliness and isolation. Again, approximately 69% of pastors struggle with a lack of deep, vulnerable friendships. We're going to come back to that one. That's a huge issue.
Yeah.
Because again, how we started off, no one really understands what you're going through. Yeah. The pressure, the weight that you carry in ministry as a senior pastor, and the burden that you carry. And so a lot of times that means, well, nobody, I can't share this with anyone. I don't have anybody confined to. So you kind of, you know, isolate yourself. Declining church attendance. That's, you know, thankfully both of you guys, you know, at this season of time, don't have to deal with that. Both have, you know, healthy, growing churches, but that's not common.
Right.
That's a big one a lot of people are dealing with. Apathy in the congregation. So the way that AI described this, it says roughly 75% of pastors identify member indifference or lack of commitment. So that could be people that are angry with what you're doing, or they just don't really, they're not going to give you the time to be a part of.
Yeah, that's a big one. I think we need to lean in on that when we get time in the podcast here.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that. Fostering connections with the unchurched. We're going to kind of group that one with another one, but really, how do you connect with people outside of the church? Mm-hmm. A work-life balance. We kind of already talked about that. Financial and economic pressures. These are all things. Was there one more on there?
There was two more.
Yeah.
It's two more. There is financial and economic, and then integrating digital and in-person ministry.
That's right. My notes cut off. See, this is a live show, and we don't want to give Dallas too much work, so we don't want him to edit too much.
But anyway. You guys brought the paper copies. Yeah. Yeah, it might show your age a little bit. That's look why at, I got the look digital at you. Guy here. Yeah.
Look at you. So, see, you're my always notes, there. Man. You're always there in a pinch.
My notes, I got it right here.
So those are the top. Those are the top 10 things that Google AI says. But let's dive into a few of those with the rest of our time. Let's go back. Number one, I want to combine these two. This was the developing leaders and volunteers, and the fostering connections with the unchurched. Because as we were looking at this list and talking about the show, you guys were saying these are actually connected pieces. Same. There's a same solution. But let's talk about the problem first. How, JT, maybe you first, how have you kind of experiencing this idea of developing leaders and volunteers?
Yeah, so, actually studies show that church volunteer numbers haven't returned to pre-COVID counts,
yeah.
Whatever you would determine as that. It's neither here nor there, but just to say that the goal is not to try to get back to where things used to be, right? Like that's moving backwards and we're only moving forwards. So what is the goal, right? We kind of have to ask ourselves that. Why is there a deficiency there? And there's things said that are like, oh, well, people just aren't committed anymore. And, you know, and things like to where it's placing blame on the people that just won't, quote unquote, step up and volunteer. When really, as leaders, the question we need to be asking is, well, how are we developing people to be able to serve?
Yeah.
Right? Because oftentimes people don't want to serve because they may not actually feel like they have any value to give. Mm. And so it starts with giving and speaking that value and empowerment to somebody to be able to say, hey, look, God created you in this way, and actually being able to take the time to identify a quality or characteristic in that person that you see in them, and then take the time to say, we want to equip you to do this. It's a longer process, but you develop the person in much greater depth, ideally with much more longevity of serving. And even more importantly, helping them to become more of who God's calling them to be, and bringing that out that God has already instilled, right? Yeah. And it's a process, but it's discipling. It's discipling someone in the relationship with Christ.
Yeah.
So,
I agree with you. I sat in a meeting presentation this week about a new initiative we're doing to try to mobilize more people into serving. Mm. And it was very insightful. But when I see this stat, 77% of pastors, you know, say they're struggling in this area, I'm thinking about a conversation I had with a guy in Alabama. Mm-hmm. And I was doing a training in Alabama. This guy, visits with me afterwards. And he said, man, I'm just so burned out. And I'm like, well, tell me what you're doing. He goes, well, I'm the first one at the church, and I get there and I clean the bathrooms. He said, then after that, I fire up the computers and I make sure that I'm there for all the rehearsal. And then I get my songs ready. I said, wait a minute, you're doing the song? Yeah, I'm doing the songs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. then I do that. And then he goes on this litany of everything from, you know, doing every single job to then saying goodbye to everybody and then coming on Saturday to mow the grass. Yeah. I mean, every job. Mm-hmm. And I just looked at him. I said, well, I'm burned out just talking to you right now. I'm so, and I said, why have you not allowed someone else to help you with this? Mm-hmm. And he just kind of looked at me like that was a weird question.
Yeah.
And really he just said, well, this is just kind of what we know. If you're the pastor, you're supposed to do all the stuff at the church. That's what the people expect.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there was a cultural disconnect from the biblical idea that we're all a part of the body. We're all given spiritual gifts. We all have a part to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was really standing in the way of this. But I felt the pain. I'm not minimizing what he's saying.
Yeah.
I felt the real pain of him saying, I really do feel that all this is on me.
Yeah.
And I would say that's where this 77% is coming from. That a lot of these guys, I'm saying I've cycled out in and out of it too, but that this is all on my shoulders. If I walk away, everything falls apart.
Right.
Yeah. And if that's what a pastor is feeling, if I was talking to a pastor right now, and that's what you're feeling, then that's got to change.
Yeah.
And part of that change is going to be helping to realize that you can't take ministry away from people. You have to lead them to embrace it themselves. Mm-hmm. And that requires, you know, to your point, investing in people to get to that point. I think a lot of times when pastors in this role, they're like, I need help in the nursery. Okay. I need help in this and this and this. And so the holes in the dike are just, you know, going crazy. And what they really need is to say, okay, I need a process by which I can engage people, cast vision for them, I can relationally connect with them, and then move them toward active service. Now, a guy hears that and go, that's another thing I got to do.
Exactly, yeah.
But here's the thing. If you don't start there, then nothing else is going to be fixed. And it can't just be about plugging the dike. It's got to be about developing people and getting them where God's designed them to be.
We've seen a lot of people, the churches that we're working with, we've seen a lot of people, it's always just the immediate ask. Right. It's, mm-hmm. I have a need, I ask you, you may say yes. Yeah. And so I think them doing it, one of the dangers of them doing that we've seen is that as when they do get somebody that says yes, and maybe they do a really poor job of preparing them for that role or that, then that lady will never volunteer for you again.
Right.
This, what you guys are saying is, hey, there's a development process. If you create this runway, if you create, even integrate it with part of your disciple making, you know, essences and DNA of your church. And hey, that's just how we develop. We prepare them for this role. We're creating relationships. We're making sure that they're a good fit for this rather than just, you know, immediately, hey, I have a need. I've got to ask. And I think that's where the frustration is too, is because I have 50 volunteers I need for VBS. So I've just got to start guilting people into it.
Broadcast it. Yeah.
Right? And it's the trick is, how do you get in front of that?
Yeah. And you do have to get in front of it. Yeah. You have to get upstream from the urgency of the ask to saying, okay, how do we develop people? To your point, mm-hmm. how do we develop people from a discipleship standpoint? How do I develop people? And then how does that lead to information about gifting and serving? And then that leading to where God's led you and onboarding people properly. You know, Jesus said, come and see. Are there opportunities for the people to come and see what you're doing? Or Jesus said, you know, follow me. Are there opportunities to follow them into different areas of ministry and see what's available? Jesus said, be with me. Is there opportunity for them to shadow, right? Yeah. I mean, those same invitations apply when it comes to service.
Yeah.
And it takes thinking a little strategically on the front end, you know, being a little bit more methodical. Is that going to solve all your volunteer problems next Thursday? No, but it will a year from now.
Yeah.
It will if you're staying at it. And so I think that's something that we can coach people to do, to help them get ahead of it. Yes, there's some immediate needs, but you can't just live in the tyranny of the urgent.
Well, and we try to solve long-term problems in the short term, right? And that's just not in short-term ways, and that's just not how it works. We're meeting with a church consultant right now because we're in this exact area of trying to develop a strategy for engaging volunteers and empowering the people of the church to serve in the church in various capacities. And one of the things that was convicting to me, and just to give you some context, based on Tim Keller's article about church growth, Trinity is too big to be considered a small church now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're on the smaller end of the mid-sized church. And there's a critical shift there that a pastor has to take, that and the verbiage that's being used is that you go from being a doer to being an equipper. And I had to stop and I looked at my to-do list for that week. And it was literally all things to do, right? And I was like, how many things that I need to do are actually equipping people for things?
Yeah.
And I was really convicted because I went, wow. So before I change the process of drawing people in and making it look good, right, and all these different things, I have to change me and my mindset to recognize if I want other people to shift and change, I have to have the mindset and perspective of being willing to change what I'm doing as well. It doesn't change who I am. It just changes the way that I need to lead, which is really important.
That is a very great challenge for every pastor to say, okay, how much am I doing and how much am I equipping others to do?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the majority are going to end up doing on the do list, right? Yeah, it is the to-do list, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But how am I equipping others to help out?
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. I think sometimes we derive the joy out of the doing.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, I like doing that. I kind of like that. I like to be the guy that you know, does that, and mm-hmm. people see that I do that, instead of equipping and developing others. But equipping the saints for the work of the ministry right. is the job description.
It is the work.
Of the pastors and teachers, yeah. right? Yeah. And so we have to shift into, okay, mm-hmm. I've got to be more of an equipper and to right. empower and release people yeah. to that and not just do it all myself.
Cool. That goes into your point, though, right, with moving outside of the community, right? Like, because that's what you were getting into as well, is fostering connection with the unchurched, mm-hmm. is that there's no perfect strategy for that, right? We oftentimes, when we think about engaging people outside of the church, we think programming opportunities to be able, well, the reality is people, Lord willing, disciples, live in the cultural flow of reality that's around us and that we're in every day much more than we can program engagement in reality, right? And so the continual development of people to really allow the church not only to be the ministry, but also the training ground for what God might be leading someone to just in their everyday life, they both go hand in hand. So it's equipping someone to do what is needed within the church, but gives them the confidence to then maybe step out of their comfort zone a little bit more outside of the church yeah. as well.
And that's where I get this. To me, this is a main distinctive of a disciple-making church. Because if you're a disciple-making church, that doesn't mean that you just run disciple-making groups. That's not what this means. It's a complete different mindset. Like, our mindset is that we're looking at Jesus as the model for life and for ministry. So the holistically over the church, it's all about development. It's developing people towards the right. cross. It's yeah. now once they cross the line of faith, it's developing them as a member of this body, which includes volunteers. So you're always developing, but there's that key mm-hmm. but are you really developing leaders, disciple-making leaders who can lead ministry and are actually ministering outside the four walls of the church?
Right, yeah.
So to me, the whole conversation is, are you a disciple-making church? If you're dealing with developing leader problem, volunteer problem. Well, I need more leaders. I need more volunteers. What do you always tell people in trainings, Craig? If you need more volunteers, if you need more leaders, what do you got to do?
You got to make them.
Got to make them. Got to grow them.
You can't. You'd like to have them just transfer their letter.
Yeah. And which happens.
Happen.
That's a good.
But really, you got to make them.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to, this is really, how do you develop a holistic system mm-hmm. of disciple-making? We would say look to the life of Jesus on how to do that, and what yeah. does that look like in your context? But to me, that's where you start. Is it an easy work? No. Is it a quick fix? No. Mm-hmm. But I love your point of, hey, is this going to help you fix your problem by Thursday? No, but in a year, it'll be different.
Yeah.
And I really think that's what happens if you were to start thinking, developing people from wherever they are, to a few steps forward and start thinking strategically, leading yeah. out. I think, you know, what you said, JT, leading this out and modeling this mm-hmm. is probably one of the best steps any leader out there can do.
It's just a great question to ask. Am I part of the solution or am I part of the problem?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm not piling on pastors, because no. every pastor doesn't want to be the problem. I don't want to be the problem,
yeah.
but I could be. I could be contributing unknowingly.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great question to ask. How much am I doing? How much am I equipping? When it comes to outreach here, you know, it was, let's see, what number was that? That was
seven.
Oh, yeah. The fostering connections with the unchurched. The church is as a priority. 99% of the pastors admit that they're not highly effective in outreach. You know, you think that was the first thing Jesus did with his guys.
Mm-hmm.
Get them out.
He just got them out.
Yeah.
Got them out interacting, got them out moving with the crowds, got them out of the building. And again, I think that's a great, easy first step
yeah.
is how can I, and again, you don't have to get your whole church out.
Mm-hmm.
Just start with three guys,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
that can help you begin that process. But again, it's more that start small, mm-hmm. develop a plan,
yeah.
and then work that moving forward. And I guarantee you that two guys will turn into 10, that'll turn into mm-hmm. 15 or 20, and you'll start to see real movement happen.
Because yeah. then you're training people to develop that mindset
right.
as well. You're not just training them to do a volunteer task at that point. You're training them to actually look at life in a different way
right.
and look at the opportunities that are in front of them. Hey, I'm at my job, and I can have a conversation. I can share the gospel with my coworker. I can share the gospel with my customer. I can, you know, you're getting them to think differently. And that's this mindset you have to get over this challenge.
I talked with a guy, one of the last trainings we did, you know, he said, well, we just don't do any outreach. I'm like, well, what do you mean by outreach?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because that was, yeah. I wasn't sure that we were talking about the same thing. And he said, well, I'm trying to get people to come to my church. Mm. So outreach for him was getting people from the community to attend his church.
Yeah. Success is having them come.
Right.
Yeah.
Outreach wasn't us engaging with people in the field, in the harvest field,
yeah.
Right? And then having spiritual conversations. That was different. And so I think that, you know, part of this question here of fostering connection with the unchurched, that may be, I can't get them to come to my church. I don't know what the context is of mm-hmm. this survey, but I think that defining your terms, what do I mean? What are the expectations? What did Jesus do? Again, start small, develop a few,
yeah.
and then help them to do the same, and you'll be in a different place, you know, 12 yeah. months from now.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to finish that one, and with that challenge. So let's go on to another one. I think this is one I think you both can speak, you know, out of your own personal experience, because again, not many people can feel this or feel this in the way that pastors do, especially senior pastors. That was feelings of loneliness and isolation. Approximately 69% of pastors struggle with a lack of deep, vulnerable friendships because of their professional role and the fishbowl. Nature of their ministry is how they put the fishbowl nature of their,
ooh, yeah.
Everybody's looking in, everybody's walking, tapping on the glass. What's Craig? I'm looking at Craig's life. Why are you, Craig, driving that new Cadillac?
Oh, hey.
He has a Chevrolet.
Craig.
But you do have that fishbowl, eyes on you in a lot of different ways. But, you know, let's just talk around that. Again, how have you experienced isolation and maybe loneliness?
Yeah. You know, me personally, there have been moments when I feel lonely. I think most of that has been because I'm shouldering a big decision or I'm shouldering maybe a conflict that I can't, you know, some things that we deal with, we cannot talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just yeah. in the vault.
Right.
And so I can talk to the Lord about it, but I don't want to come home and talk to my wife about it because then she's carrying it around. And then yeah. if they ask her, then she's then feels obligated to answer mm-hmm. a certain way. And so sometimes I don't even do that. But I would say it would be moments when I felt that way, but I would not say that I have felt that in the predominant way mm-hmm. in throughout my ministry.
Yeah.
As I look back, I don't see that I went through seasons of this.
Yeah.
I had moments of that, you know, which everybody does, yeah. I think, no matter what your job is. But I do not have seasons of it.
Yeah.
And I think there are some reasons for that, which we can get to
yeah.
in just a minute. But I want to back up, and I want to lay something out here. I want JT to jump in on this. I think one of the unique challenges of being a pastor is that when you are in a secular job, and Ben, you should be able to speak to this, you go to your work and you live in your work world.
Mm-hmm.
And you may fight with a coworker, or you may disagree with your boss, or something may blow up, but you get to leave your work world. And on the weekend, you get to go to your church family and you yeah. can tell people what a lousy boss you got, and they'll pray for you and believe in you and think you're right and he's wrong. And then you get to go to your family, and your family is not really touched by your work world, other than the fact that if you get fired, then they're impacted. But the things you decide at work don't impact your middle school kid.
Yeah.
But when you're in ministry, those worlds collide.
Mm-hmm.
They overlap. And your work job and your family life and your church life are all meshed into one. So when you make a decision at work, it directly impacts your biblical community.
Mm-hmm.
And it conversely, also impacts your children and your wife, because yeah. so-and-so decision you made upset so-and-so, and now they're looking at your wife mean, you know, from the choir loft because she's mad at you, and your kid. Yeah, I mean, all that gets enmeshed together, and we lose this kind of separation that allows us to kind of navigate these worlds.
Yeah.
And I would say that most pastors' stress and loneliness comes from that, those worlds colliding.
Wow.
and the complexity of it. That's
a great point.
The real complexity that is there. Yeah. And that's a hard one to navigate. And a lot of young guys going in ministry, I'm saying this is the reality you're walking into, yeah. and you have to learn how to navigate that mm-hmm. that world, because you don't have the luxury of the separation between your work life, your family life, mm-hmm. and your church life. And I think that contributes to the sense of loneliness, because, well, now, you know, I do something and I say something, and then it starts dipping into all these areas of my life. And so I just have to do this all by myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you're in a very dangerous, vulnerable place, when you're isolated and mm-hmm. alone,
yeah.
You know, the enemy just attacks you so greatly in those spaces. So JT, you've experienced that, those worlds coming together,
yeah.
right? What yeah. what is your, as we're talking about this, what's coming into your mind?
Yeah, so a couple different things. One, I've been in Sweetwater for 4.5 years as a lead pastor, but prior to that, I was a student pastor for a little over 7 years. Different tensions depending upon the role that you have,
yeah.
right? Because you can, you know, you can feel isolation on staff with staff members if you don't have a good relationship there, right? Or if something in your ministry is going really, really well, right? That or not going so well, right? There, it just depends on all kinds of different relational dynamics. But as a lead pastor, right, when I'm making decisions, you're right, it does impact everything, because, you know, especially, man, in our community in Sweetwater, it's a tight-knit place. And for about half the church, they've been there a lot longer than I have, you know? And so navigating those things, and I love what you said about, I love and hate what you said about what the enemy does in isolation, you know, because I think of 1 Peter, right? 5:8, right? That your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion waiting for someone to devour. But if you look at how a lion or lioness attacks, it runs straight into the pack. Not to eat the entire pack, but to isolate the one,
right,
and then to devour, right? Yeah. And so when it comes to that isolation, honestly, one of the things that's been very helpful for me is I've got a friend who lives in San Antonio still, who there's not a detail about my life and ministry that he doesn't know, because I can just call him. I can tell him anything and everything I want to. He's 4 hours away, and he's just a listener. He's just an encourager.
And he doesn't know anybody in Sweetwater.
He doesn't know any until he comes to the church, right? Yeah. Yeah. Until he comes to the church when they come to visit occasionally. But there's got to be some sort of healthy outlet. And I do understand what you're saying about, like, there are things that come out that you're like, you know, honestly, we have been blessed not to feel isolated at Trinity.
Wow.
What a phenomenal blessing that is. There have been moments of isolation when I know it can feel that way. But then I have to step back and remember the truth that I know we're not isolated, yeah. because they've taught us what it really looks like how to love.
All right.
But even in all of that, I can have some really close relationships in the church, and it can be incredibly tempting when I'm going through a difficulty or a tension with somebody within the church to navigate to somebody else in the church and talk about that. And then you have to remember, that's not a good idea at all, because then you're actually being part of the problem at that point. If there aren't any healthy outlets, then of course the other option is unhealthy. So what does that then look like? It's like, what does that look like for you as far as like your healthy outlets of being able to navigate some of that feelings of isolation?
Yeah. I think when I said I've had moments, but not seasons, that was because number one, I've just been committed to invest in men.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm always investing in guys in our church, and that investment is a real friendship. It's not just, okay, we go through this book and I'm, you know, it's just my job kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm truly investing relationally in people. And so there is that relational reciprocity, right, that mm-hmm. comes with that. You know, people are investing in me too. I mean, in that relationship. And so I think that has allowed me to not be completely untethered and mm-hmm. to, you know, kind of pull away, because I have this group of guys with me. I also think that when you are going through leadership challenges in the church and people are opposing you mm-hmm. on, issues, which just happens. Yeah. It's really the death knell of a leader to retreat and just to pull in and just, you know, like the turtle, just pull in the shell and just don't come out. That's the death knell of a leader. Then you have to stay engaged and connected. Yeah. And so having these relationships within the body are very helpful. Yeah. Then secondly, having people outside that church that I know and I love, that I've spent time with, that I can connect with, and other pastors. Yeah. And so I think that's, again, part of the heart of Disciple First is to be a trusted voice that you can, because we've been there. I mean, there is really probably not much you can go through that we haven't had some experience with, and to be able to cast those cares on the Lord and shoulder the burdens of our brothers in that way. And that's really, really important. And a lot of guys just do feel very isolated because they're not, I got nobody else to talk to about this, and all my worlds are colliding and things are spinning out. Yeah. You know, this loneliness also relates to the wife of a pastor. You know, it seems to me, I see this over and over. Pastor's wife just pulls away because she's feeling every criticism of her husband. She feels it 10 times. And so she just pulls away because she can't take the criticism that her husband faces. And so,
and we eventually move away from that while they may hold on to that a little bit longer.
Oh yeah. Cause you're part of kind of recovering that and dealing with that and restoring it and moving on. But she's like, but she still said that about me. hard. That's hard. It's a challenge. It's a real challenge. Yeah. And so I think there's the reason why this number is so high is because it is a real issue, and it takes somebody that's kind of navigating those waters to kind of come along with you and help you to chart that out in a healthy way so that you do stay healthy. Yeah. But I tell you what, with all that being said, I love the local church.
Absolutely.
And I've been pastor for a long time, and I still love it. I still love coming to work. I still love our people. Yeah. And I've never had a situation, no matter where I've been, that I didn't feel like I loved our people and they loved us too. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, that can happen. Yeah. In other words, it doesn't have to be this super toxic thing that once you touch it, it corrupts everything, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like that.
It does. Yeah. It doesn't mean that it's every single thing that you navigate is tension. It just, that's obviously what we're like addressing on that. And I just think of the word integrity continues to come to mind because, you know, emotions and feelings and situations are relevant and they come and go. But if you maintain your integrity and truth in the middle of everything, not with the goal of winning an argument, right, or anything like that, but I had one of my mentors one time say, when I walk into something in a situation of tension, the first thing that I need to make sure I ask is how am I going to point this person closer to the cross? Yeah. And the first thing that came in my mind when he said that, I was like, that's definitely not the first thing that often comes to my head.
I want to put them on the cross.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. But I will say too, like as a pastor, like as a young pastor, I can't speak for being an old pastor.
You can't either.
About? No, I'm not. I'm just, we have probably other friends that can. I've actually got a prayer team of guys, 8 guys in our church that, so they're within the walls of our church that I did talk to one-on-one ahead of time, and I entrust with some details. I don't give everything, but some details. And they're guys I've prayerfully considered, guys that I know have ministry experience that I can trust with anything. And literally, there have been times that I would text them on. I remember one Sunday morning, I was texting them and say, guys, I don't know what it is, but I just feel like so incompetent right now. I feel isolated, and I feel like kind of an imposter in this role that I'm in. I started in this role as a lead pastor when I was 29. And so I was like, am I just pulling the wool over these people's eyes? And I'll never forget, one of the guys in my prayer team is about 6'4", 230 pounds, 40 pounds. And he doesn't even knock. Right. And my office door is my shade is closed. He doesn't even knock. He just comes right in and he just gives me this big bear hug and we both just started crying. Right. And you can't replace that.
No.
And so to have community, to have genuine community though, requires vulnerability.
It does. And that was something I wanted to point out.
Yes.
That was a humbling thing that you did.
Yeah.
To be honest with your feelings and to relationally connect with people. Mm-hmm. And again, sometimes if I'm not in relationship with people, it can't always be everybody else's fault that I'm not in relationship with people.
Absolutely.
You know, am I willing to be humble? Am I willing to be genuine? Am I willing to be real with people that I'm investing in? And I think that's kind of where it starts.
Right.
And then you develop that reputation, right? So you're not isolating yourself in that regard.
And you model that too for other relationships in the church as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I just, what I'm hearing from a lot of this is, yeah, it's real. The tendencies to pull in are because of a real dynamic, but you have to be intentional. You have to be vulnerable and really kind of almost let people know that it's okay. Because I think a lot of, from the church member's perspective, a lot of times it may be like, I can't approach Craig. JT, he's the senior pastor. Yeah. But having a little bit of vulnerability, having people that you trust around you, investing your life in others, and all of that, it's just going to wash over, give opportunity for God to use somebody that's around you to encourage you when you're feeling lonely. So it's not worth the risk. You know, you've got to, even if it's uncomfortable, be vulnerable, find somebody that's trustworthy, and let somebody in. Let's talk about one more before we go. I think this is, again, I think it's a big one. Apathy in the congregation. Again, this can be, this could be people maybe like they don't want to commit to initiatives you're doing, or, hey, we have this, you know, we have this, we need a bunch of leaders, which we kind of already talked about, but whatever initiative you have, it's a lack of commitment to that, but also maybe they just don't like what you do. Like just kind of an overall apathy, in your people. That doesn't happen here, right, Craig? Everybody likes every decision you make and signs up for everything you need, right?
Of course. Absolutely. You know, it's funny when I look at that, apathy in the congregation, this is a real thing, but it reminds me of a conversation I had with a group of leaders from a large, very successful church. And we were talking about their systems and what they're doing. And I said, what's your greatest struggle? And they said, you know what? We just can't get our people to give. They won't give on a regular basis. And we're always, you know, struggling with that. I can't get people to show up. You know, I mean, if it's deer season, they're gone. If it's, you know, if it's baseball season, they disappear. They vaporize. You know, I can't give people to volunteer. So they were kind of just not ranting, but just, you know, getting it all off their chest. And so I wrote those things down and I said, so I put a circle around all those. And I said, really what you're saying is you have a hard time getting people to commit. Because that seemed like that's all the same thing. And they said, yeah, that's exactly right. I have a hard time. And I said, you know what? It's hard to get high commitment if your whole ministry is wrapped around providing low commitment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So true.
So if everything is, oh, we're just going to be super easy, come here, here's all our menu, here's everything we have, we're here to take care of you, and la, 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 we're not expecting much of you.
What flavor coffee do you have?
Exactly. You know, you can't, on the end of that, produce this willing to sacrifice, go to the world, you know, that it's only high commitment environments that produce high commitment in people. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so what they were missing, they didn't have any environment that was a high commitment environment. And you, when you look at Jesus's life, what you find is that he started with very low commitment, but then he gave them these invitations that required even greater and greater and greater commitment. Some took it, but some didn't. And so I think that you have to look at your church and you say, okay, are there places where I'm ratcheting up the commitment level, knowing not everybody's going to take it, but guess what? Some will. And those that do will take a next step, and they may take another step. And so you can't get high commitment from low commitment environments. And so that's just a good takeaway to think about, how am I doing that? Now, in a disciple making environment, that's a high commitment environment. Not everybody's. It's kind of like the recruiters that went to the high school. Have you heard the story? And the Navy guy gets up and he says, man, you guys would be great Navy people. We got cool uniforms, and you sail the seas, and, you know, and girls like guys in uniform, and blah, 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 come see me at the table. The next Army guy goes up, man, you can be a part of this unit and you'll be amazing. Blah, 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 blah. And so and on it goes until the Marine guy gets up there, and the Marine guy just stands there and looks at him and just silence for a minute. And he says, yeah, maybe one. There may be one here that can make it. None of y'all are up to snuff. And he sits down. Well, who are they piling up to see? They're piling up to the Navy guy.
For the challenge.
I mean, the Marine guy.
Yeah,
why? Challenge. Because he's like, you know, I'm gonna do something so hard that most of you lame brain guys aren't gonna make it, but that calls up that high commitment calls up something in them. And I think we gotta do what Jesus did and call people up to a higher commitment and not be afraid to do that. Yeah. Because if you don't do that, then you'll never really get the commitment you're looking for.
A lot of pastors I've seen that their heart is so big for their people, they want everyone to do something. They want everyone to have this opportunity. We want everybody to do this right. I want everybody to be discipled right now. Well, then, so what do? To get everybody to be a part of this discipling issue, we're going to lower the bar because maybe not everybody can wake up at a specific time or give a specific time, so we're going to make it easy. Right. And so what they miss out on, what I think, and what I'm hearing from you is, so even if it's one, okay, but what we forget in a church, what happens to that one guy? He doesn't always leave. Like, he stays.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden, at some point over time, if you're consistent, if you're steady, if you're faithful, and just keep adding one, two, three, all of a sudden you're going to reach critical mass at some point.
You will.
And then the culture will change. Then all of a sudden, we expect commitment here, and in a good way. I mean that
not
in a good
legalistic way.
No, like, hey, God can use a chump like me.
Yeah.
God wants to use a chump like, I don't know why, but he does. And that becomes the expectation. And it's like, it's fun to give. It's fun to do those things because it's what God deserves, number one, but it's also, man, he actually lets us involve it. But I think so many times it's like, I think you said it earlier, it's the short-term result. We're trying ways to get short-term results, so we're going to lower the bar so we have more people. And I really do genuinely think most pastors, that comes from a very good heart because they really want people to be a part of those things because it's good, and I know it's good, and I know, but they're not going to get the outcome that they really desire.
Yeah.
And Jesus' ministry didn't produce everybody going to that level.
No.
Yeah. Is this the tip of the spear that we talk about? Yeah. That only comes through successive challenges for greater commitment. But those few are what's really going to change the world. And so you got to think about everybody's in a process.
Yeah.
You know, either you're low commitment, what's a first up, and then what's a next challenge?
Yeah.
And then thinking about it and developing that way.
Well, and it's life change. Right? Like what is more motivating than anything is life change. And that goes on both sides. That's from being someone who's discipling somebody else or being discipled, you know, seeing life change on both sides of it is motivating. Right. And so when you have a taste of that and you have a taste of like, oh, there's something deeper here. Right? People spend their time on what they see is most valuable. And so, you know, I think sometimes in the church, unfortunately, we can do a really bad job at trying to compete with the demands of other things that other families and people have going on, as opposed in saying, hey, we need to make this as appealing as possible so that they'll come. And I think that already sets a standard of cheapening the gospel, if you will, up front, as opposed to actually showing interest in who they are as individuals, the things that they're involved in. And then instead of telling them why this will be different to come to church, you actually are showing them how the way that you're engaging them is different. And then that is attracting because it's more depth than what they might experience in any other thing that they're doing. Because unfortunately, some people experience more community in other areas of life that aren't the church. And the church is kind of, in a sense, failing in that, depending upon, of course, everything going on within the specific church. But if we can channel this idea of this God-given innate desire of community and show and model community, just as Jesus did, he said, come with me, not, hey, just sit down and I'll talk to you, right? He said, come with me and follow me, and I'll show you this. Then all of a sudden, it's not just motivating to continue to follow. It's motivating to say, hey, this has been so impactful to me. I've got to show this to somebody else, right? And so again, much longer process, but much more lasting to be able to build upon.
Yeah. No, and it's just, I do think that it goes back to you can't settle for low commitment. Like you just, you have to take a risk and just say, okay, how do I invest in somebody relationally to get them to the point where they'll take a commit? Because, again, it goes back to the volunteer thing. If you just try to ask somebody to get a volunteer, you know, will you fill this spot right now? They may say yes, or they'll probably say no. Same way, will you take this step of commitment? If I only just ask that in a second, what if I just pour my life into get into somebody? What if I serve them? What if I really? So I'm thinking of some guys in your group recently that had been at church for a long time, led in a season here for, you know, and for a while they weren't willing to take a step of commitment to be in a discipling relationship. Yep. And these are seasoned guys. These are guys that are deacons and high level leaders, but they were just, nah, that's okay. Well, through the course of years, you love them, you shepherd them, you serve them mm-hmm. through different ways and, you know, serve their family through hard times and all this. Well, now all of a sudden they're ready because of that relational investment that you've made. Now they're ready to take that step of commitment. And that's what I think of when I think of, hey, somebody's not ready to commit, then okay, then I must go deeper in relationship. Yeah. If they're not ready to walk with me, I need to go deeper in relationship.
Yeah, that's good.
Because there may be a sin issue, and you get to that when you're in deeper relationship, but maybe not in a discipling relationship at that point in time. But I need to serve them. I need to love them. I need to let them understand really what I'm about. And so, to me, that's kind of how my brain thinks. I just need to,
you know, and
be
again,
closer to them.
Back to the life of Jesus. You know, he spent 18 months cultivating a relationship with these guys before he ever said, "Follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men."
Yeah.
And again, that was a principle. I mean, he's investing in these guys, spending time with these guys, and then inviting them to come alongside. You know, it doesn't always have to be sign this letter of commitment. Yeah. You know, sometimes, hey, come with me. We're going to go do this. And they get a flavor of it and like, hey, maybe we could do this. You know, and you start working them through some levels of commitment. You can do that. Or at least joining a group. And then now we're going to invest in you in that way. And challenge you to the next step. I usually just like to ask guys, you know, what do you think your next step is? Because most people think going to church means I join the church, I get baptized, and then I sit in a pew for the rest of my life, or I go to endless services or go to Sunday school or whatever your thing is, and that's it. It terminates with me just showing up.
Right.
And for them to know there are greater challenges, a greater steps ahead for you on this journey, I think that's a new thought for most people.
Yeah.
And so we get a chance to do that.
Yeah. Well, I think like Gen Z right now, statistics are showing that they're craving depth that previous generations did not crave. Right. It's about planting seeds that you don't know how long it'll be until they actually grow because we don't have that control. Right. But I was just telling Ben earlier about, a guy that I was able to, get to know through being the chaplain of the football team in Sweetwater. And I shared the gospel with him a year and a half ago, and he was fairly resistant to it. And then about 8 weeks ago, he was in a crisis moment. He'd already graduated. He was in college, and he was coming back because he was just coming back to Sweetwater for the semester. He said, "JT, I'm in a bad spot, and I know now I really need God." And long story short, over the last 8 weeks, I've been meeting with him every week, discipling him, and we just baptized him on Sunday.
Amen.
And that's awesome. But it was one of those things that it was just, to me, it was just out of the blue. And honestly, to all you other pastors out there that might doubt something within you as far as sharing the gospel with people, I shared it with him, and I was like, this is the part that he was supposed to accept it, right? Like right then, that was a year and a half ago. Like, why did I share it wrong? I'm a pastor. I should be able to do this well. You know, this shouldn't happen. But then it wasn't God's timing.
Yeah, that's right.
The seed was planted, and he walked through a number of different scenarios and situations. Now, all of a sudden, he's already read through the whole book of Matthew, now reading through James, and is now telling his friends about Jesus and what God has done in his life. And so I think we can oftentimes also try to push the envelope a little too much.
Yeah.
And I can try to go along with my speed of agenda and not be open to what the Spirit of God is actually doing in their life.
Totally right.
It's easy to do because we're prideful. Maybe just me, Craig, but
And you want him to come to Christ.
Right? Oh, exactly.
So you want him to, and so you just like, man, would you just pray this prayer and then just get on with
yeah,
it?
Yeah, like this is not supposed to happen.
But we have to give room for the Holy Spirit to do his convicting work.
Right.
And you got to hit the wall, you know, and that's what we talk about the path of life. You know, you got to hit the wall of realization of your desperate need.
Yeah.
And so that's the work that the Holy Spirit did in him. And that's why, now he's calling you saying, what do I need to do? But you were there for him before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a challenge. And that's the opportunity of evangelism is laying that relational groundwork.
Right.
So that when they do hit the wall,
you're right there.
You're there.
Yeah.
You're their first phone call, which is what it was in your case.
Well, thank you guys for this conversation today. Really enjoy it. Thanks for driving all the way to Sweetwater just for a little podcast.
Hey, man, I'll do it any day. Just let me know. Yeah.
Yeah. And Craig, again, thank you for your wisdom, and both of you for your heart of just to really encourage and equip other pastors. That's really our heartbeat at Disciple First. So if you are lonely, if you are experiencing any of these challenges, man, we would love to connect with you personally, or we can connect you with our trainers and coaches and other pastors we're working with. We do a lot of things with the goal of really just to connect pastors, you know, JT with a pastor from, you know, Mississippi or different things where as we gather. And so if that's you out there, we would just encourage you to reach out so that we can help you. And thanks for listening.